show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So as Pluto, intelligence of the underworld stations, we welcome Graham St. John, cultural anthropologist, author of 10 books. The latest is Strange Attractor, The Hallucinatory Life of Terence McKenna, Celtic Word Crafting, Scorpionic Detective, Pattern Tracker, Entheo Enthusiast, Erudite in Cultural Hermetica, Hermetic Esoterica, Brewing All into an Outward Expression of Inner Collective Conversing, kind of like the Beatles, who hands the baton to us now. We go onward to symbiotic mutualism. So this is a fantastic book. I'm going to bring Graham in two seconds here, but we go, yeah, and we will introduce Terence to those who don't know him. But great rave reviews. I love Are You Serious? Always. This enrapturing book is psychoactive in all the best ways. I think that's true. You don't know Terence McKenna until you've read Strange Attractor and many other great things. So welcome, Graham St. John.
Thank you, Carolyn.
Yeah. So you're on this wonderful book tour, and I'm using the book as bibliomancy opening to, like, oh, that's incredibly pertinent. It is a divinatory tool. And I so appreciate the complexity and dedication, because we're all befoibled, right? So you honor his gift and his befoiblements, which is a grand thing to do. So
I appreciate that.
So for us now, you know, to tease your Irv and Terence's dedicated, you know, quirky life, you know, what do you think is crucial to us all now?
Well, thanks for that introduction, Carolyn. Befoibelment is, I suppose, if you're going to boil things down into one word, that might be it. Or gnomic might be another word. And it's hopeful that my book, well, tomic, is not too gnomic. But Terence being the ultimate gnomic totem. Well, we're talking about the psychedelic Renaissance man of the 20th century, and whose life is seemingly far more popular in his afterlife than he was in his life, given that we're talking about a figure who has been sampled probably more than any other individual in the history of electronic music, and but his life was really a quest to understand the role of psychedelics in evolution, consciousness, yeah, and time. And as you know, he remains remarkably popular today, in that he left us at the age of 53 in 2000. But I've been saying that he sort of represents a net era exemplar of a figure who appears to be in a constant state of departure whilst always arriving. And in that he kind of left the building around the time of the emergence of the internet, which he has surfed. And in fact, he was surfing since the 60s, because he really, he would claim that he dreamt it into being, the internet. Hmm. But a longtime lover of cybernetics and cyberculture, presaging, and had various presentiments with regard to the emergence of virtual reality that he occupies. So that's part of what my book is getting towards. But it really is it's the most comprehensive biography of Terence, and we haven't really had a biography for 25 years since
he's right. It hums, and you know, I don't know if you knew, but when you were born, and Terrence, let me talk astrology, it is my craft. So you are Sagittarius, Mercury in Sagittarius, same as Terrence's Mercury. All biographers should share a Mercury, and the nature of that is to see if this works for you. Cast net of curiosity widely, widely. Inhale it back in. Edit. I like this from here. This is liberating. This is not. Collage and put out again. Does that make sense as part of your process? Extend, inhale, edit, collage, put out.
I think it's all about sustaining the rhythm and the flow. It's a never-ending process. I mean, this biography is not the final word on Terrence. And there's much more to be said by myself and a lot of others. I imagine that it's hopeful that this project encourages others to contribute to the story, because there's so many other stories out there. I mean, I had the privilege of talking to more than 80 people whose stories permeate the book, including family, friends, lovers, acquaintances. But there's so many other stories out there, and this is the kind of thing that may hopefully prompt people to raid their archives and excavate their memories, because there's so much stuff out there.
I mean, as you make clear, Terrence is himself, but he's also a kind of secondary source. We might even quip that, Joseph Campbell and Jung are that, going, go read this, go read that, go read this, right? So his extensive erudition, we dusted off going, So for many of us who kind of coincided with Terrence's life, it's like, ooh, very humming, and we'll get to Berkeley and all. But, DMT, right, DMT, and which is a, after I had a direct DMT experience, I searched for Terrence on the internet. This was after he died, but he's always available to say something, and because my experience was, if actual death is any less showbiz, death should get its money back, and Terrence really concurred. It's like, whoa, and it is this very, fractal, building blocks of creation, but also the elves. And I just remember once, Botanical Preservation Corps, we, including Terrence, were all in the rainforest of Veracruz, and I was telling Terrence about a friend of mine, Dr. Wu, who would talk to 12-foot-tall praying mantises and a whole mythology, and Terrence said, oh, that's old Shovelhead. We encounter him on the astral plane. I'm like, oh, so this is kind of real. So do you want to dive us into DMT, ayahuasca, mushrooms, LSD, wherever you want to go?
It's so central. The trip, I guess you could call the tryptamine mysteries, particularly psilocybin mushrooms and DMT, which were central to his quest. I tell a story of how he was introduced to DMT in February 1966, care of his old buddy, his late buddy, Rick Watson, who was really quite integral to this whole project and instrumental to the story and to Terrence's story, because with that evening in Telegraph Avenue in February 1966, where he got the elves smoking DMT, something he hadn't encountered before, and that episode was essentially set him on a quest to understand what that was, and it was a life's quest, and it was kind of the quest of a mysteries initiate, and he effectively initiated a great many untold number of others into the tryptamine mysteries, directly and indirectly. And today, I suppose that he forms a kind of informing voice, just to cross-link with the mushroom experience now, an informing voice for you know, countless others today that he claimed himself that the mushroom use formed for him because he and as the story goes that after the brothers that's Terence and Dennis and some friends launched into the Amazon in March, February 1971 and looking for an organic form of DMT, but stumbling instead upon psilocybin mushrooms growing bountifully in the pastures of a place called La Charrera in Colombia. And to cut that long story short, they brought back specimens, and they eventually discovered a cultivation technique and a method and produced a book called Psilocybin, the Mushroom Grower's Guide, which many of your listeners will probably know about because that was when it's sort of 200,000 copies, I believe, that was sold.
Right. It supported him and his family for a while, yeah?
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
And, you know, really instrumental. I mean, that book deserves so much attention. I believe there's going to be some kind of fresh drift published about that book, which I hope to contribute to, and its impact. I mean, we know, for example, that I was just recently reading Dennis McNally's The Long Strange Trip, the biography of the Grateful Dead, and there's a section in there which you know, refers to Jerry's you know, fascination with that book. So we know that, you know.
Wait, whose fascination?
Jerry Garcia's.
Right. Yes, his widow was on our journey.
And that, you know, already within, we can imagine that within a couple of years of that book's publication, which would have been 1976, that, you know, untold numbers of people were cultivating it. You know.
And then maybe what's also before us is how to really tease for everybody and the baton that you pass to us and that Terence passes to us through you is, you know, to really embody this, to embody equality, to embody participation. And, you know, that this worthy vast volume. So I bibliomancied, you know, opened it up just for fun to page 196, you know, which is his bad fear trip. And I think that was useful because it's also because it's like, just because you've done, you know, like a Ralph Abraham, you know, 10,000 more DMT than anybody does not necessarily mean anything. And you bring his worthy partner, Kat Harrison, in, and there's a huge storm and they're tripping out. And you write, Harrison was transported into a familiar ecstatic state, letting go of her material form and the pressures of her responsibilities. While she is comfortable with letting go, he was not. Terence delved and was repeatedly drawn into an outrageous idea space. Yeah, all these things. He was really afraid of nothingness. And you go on. It's a brilliant description. And just to dive into some of the complexity, he falls. He has a bad time, right? And Kat is comforting him. And you write, the next day he was livid. He could not accept that his wife had passed through the storm unscathed. In the darkness, he failed to pass the test, and yet she had escaped the terror. Furious, he would never trip with her again. And he never did. No more psychoactive ventures for the remainder of their passage. So that's what I opened up to, just, you know, because, I mean, there's millions of good things, but I appreciate that you brought up, you know, the complex shadow, you know, which is really, you know, for all of us, do we really integrate this? And when in a panic, invoke Pan, you know. So what do you make out of that dynamic? And oh, and then just one last thing, because it's on it too, which is we may all know a number of great and important men, may we all be saved from becoming important in a way, but whose wives do all their booking, do all the raising of the kids, do all the thing, type their manuscripts or whatever, and yet are worthy equals. It's a phenomenon, and that's something that you go into, right? Do you want to just address that a little bit, that intimacy was not his forte?
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously an important part of the story that we're really privileged to hear, you know, Kat's voice, and there's roughly 15,000 words worth of Kat Harrison's content in the book.
Yeah,
that is almost, you know, chapter length, but it's spread throughout the book, and that's and you know, as I say, it's there's 80 plus people's stories in the book, including many stories that haven't been heard before from folks that people don't know much about, and I was privileged, and we're all privileged to hear these voices, and I do know that I'm personally looking forward to Kat Harrison's own memoir or autobiographical work, which I understand is in the works, and so this is essentially as a prelude to that, and so I think we have that to look forward to. And there's the stories from others in the book that I'm quite sure folks will want to hear more from, and Rick Watson, who I mentioned before, being another one. You know, Terry's close buddy, who never saw the limelight, but was also an extraordinary author in his own right, mostly unpublished. And so I have great privilege to access those short stories, and some of which are permeated through the book, including their first trip together on Morning Glory Seeds in 1963. Based on Rick's story, called Morning Glory, which is really quite relevant to folks in the Bay Area, especially San Francisco, because that was a trip that was undertaken in Golden Gate Park and through City Lights Bookstore and so forth. And so I try to capture some of that in the book, but I suspect it's going to leave people champing for more.
Yeah, no. It hums with resonance. I mean, as I'm reading through it, going, let me dust off all these things. Let me dust off Jung's Psychology and Alchemy, and you know, Huxley was a starting point for many people. You know, Doors of Perception and all. And I remember Andy Wilde wrote to Huxley at that time, and Huxley sent him a 5-gallon jar of psilocybin powder, and the Cambridge pharmacy capped it for him. These were those days, so dusting it all off and resonating, and then you also, you know, go into it. I mean, all of it is rich and humming, and I think humming with pertinence for those who are contemporaries or live through it or have an entheogenic affinity. And how do we tease it into usefulness now for the culture we want to ladle out of this horrific cauldron that we're in, and practice these things. And you also mentioned, because McKenna was, you said it was Ralph Abraham who got through to him. Interesting fellow you can introduce us to, who did the trialogues with Rupert Sheldrake and Terence. So you write, that Ralph said, the problem here, Ralph advised, is that you have an occult diagram. Only you understand it, and only you can interpret it, and therefore it's not very persuasive. But Terence took that in and worked it, right? And do you remember the first time you ever heard Terence on a recording or at a rave or whatever?
That's a very good question. I was asked that question last night at my launch in Berkeley, and I don't know specifically. I mean, I've never met him. I had the one chance of meeting him,
Oh.
and that would have been in Australia in '97 when he toured Australia. I'm from the Melbourne region, and but I suspect that I've heard his voice whispering into my ears through his sampled voice in various electronic music soundtracks on dance floors and in various states of discombobulation.
Right. That was a great syncretizing. I don't know if it was the first time, but I was in New Zealand and somebody said, "Oh, you gotta listen to this." Yeah. And it was Terence syncretizing, talking over rave music, and it was like, "Oh." And that was how I kind of introduced us, and let me toss it to you, that it was at the time. I mean, there's Terence himself, and then he's really tapping into, giving an outward voice to a conversation that then and now is still taking place. Like, so I mean, does that hum with yourself too? Yeah, I liken it to the Beatles in a way, which was it was an outward expression of an inner collective experience, and Terence really surfed that, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a weird thing being someone who's perceived as being some sort of expert on Terence McKenna, which is a thoroughly more than faintly absurd situation. But there's one thing that I've learned about Terence, that is that he is a phenomenon, and as with all phenomena, it appears that everyone has an opinion, and he's a subject of multiple authorities, and so it's an interesting environment to be launching a book on a subject of which there are a great many authorities. And I suppose the one admonition that I've received from countless people over the last 10 years that I've produced this book is that it better not suck. And
So, well,
so I've had a great weight on my shoulders producing this book, I can tell you. We're talking about an enigma, someone who's notoriously difficult to pin down, very, very, very challenging subject for a biographer. A figure who is wearing multiple hats, often simultaneously, whether it's being a freak, an exile, an outlaw, an alchemist, a shaman, a bard, a heretic, and many other hats and personas and identifications that he kind of assimilated with, which makes for a very chameleon-like figure and very, very challenging to write a biography, and which is part of the reason why there really hasn't been a biography for
Well,
until to this point.
let's honor the magic word you just said, which is heretic. A friend scholar of the good parts of early Christianity said, the word heretic was a term of praise in early Christianity because it meant cross-pollinating, contributor to culture, so that knowledge never degraded into dogma or superstition. So we're welcoming the heretic within us all, within Graham St. John, within Terence McKenna, within us all. Heretics arise. And then what I'm gleaning from the little I knew of Terence, it was like 3, 4 weeks in the rainforest of Mexico with Botanical Preservation Corps, with many splendid, splendid people. But to practice now, again, tossing this to you. Doesn't it not behoove us all to tease into practice now in the world all of the liberating esoterica that we encountered, that to which Terence was dedicated, going, what would it mean to practice that now? I mean, that's how I feel as the pertinence before us, as we're on the brink of imminent collapse, and then what shall we ladle out? But are you a practicing esotericist?
Well, I suppose I would say I would give an affirmative to that.
And a practicing heretic, perhaps?
I suspect so as well.
Good. Yes. And we're speaking to the heretic, cross-pollinating, you know, practicing pragmatic mystic, practice esoterica parts of all of our citizen listeners now at this crucial time. Let me say to our team, we're in the last day of our fund drive. We are offering as a pledge enticement this rich, dense, fabulous, humming, alive book, Strange Attractor, The Hallucinatory Life of Terence McKenna, for a pledge of $200. Why not? You know, and many other wonderful things that I'll bring up after our break, you know, when I reluctantly release Graham. But you can have this book, you know, and you can pledge anything, right? Any amount is completely welcome to keep Terence's voice on the air, this show on the air, Pacifica as a First Amendment wolf on the air, 800-439-5732, or kpfa.org, and to our Los Angeles WOLF team, 818-985-5735, or kpfk.org. And again, you can have this book, which is rich. It's a rich, rich meal. You've worked hard. You worked hard, Graham St. John. In my delving and perusing, why is Terence a strange attractor? Why that word?
Well, that's a very good question. I don't know that there is any other phrase that bottles his appeal, the enigma of the attraction, the strangeness of the attraction, than that phrase. I think that it just boils things down, and I'm not the first person to use that phrase, and it's been used in other contexts, and I'm happy that we got to use that title, and but it does encapsulate the enigma, I think, of Terence, a figure who is all at once a phenomenon in an occult phenomenon in the psychedelic underground, the eminence gris of cognitive liberty, but at the same time something of a preposterous anomaly in the world of psychedelic science. So it's this kind of enigma that certainly attracts me.
Yeah, and then when Terence dies on April 3rd, 2000, the sun, S-U-N, is at 14 Aries, which is the exact degree of the full moon we just had. There are metaphoric images, Terence knew about this stuff too, for each degree of the zodiac. The image for the sun when Terence died and for our full moon on Monday just behind us is a person weaving a magical basket out of serpents. And it's like, oh, whoo. No idea what that means, but I think Terence would like it. I think Terence would like that particular image. It was the dark of the moon. And Uranus Trickster's image was White Dove Descends, bearing a message of peace. Do you think he leaves us, or maybe in his posthumous existence in your book, with a liberating, carry-on, handing the baton kind of blessing? Is that part of your metaphoric reality?
Yeah. Well, you used the word trickster there, and I think that is another phrase that really captures the essence of who and what he was, and the legacy that he leaves us with. But as I say, this is not the final word on Terence. I'm hopeful that this launches further studies and excavations of people's hard drives and soft memories, starts a conversation, and that's the most I can hope for.
Right,
and I really appreciate your support.
Yes, absolutely, and all of us listening, and also a kind of like, well done, lad. I mean, to yourself for this impressive oeuvre, but also to Terence. When he's born, he's a Scorpio, of course, November 16th, 1946. The sun is at 23 Scorpio, which is a man delivers a sermon on a mount. And he did that. He really did that. And the moon for Virgo, we share the same moon, which is he really belongs to a tradition of Celtic language crafters, right? Going way back into the past. And they themselves had entheogenic associations too, but into vastness. But do you feel him as part of a tradition that then is customized to take deep delving esoterica and make it available in conversational vernacular and expression, like the raves and the concerts and everything? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, we're talking about a figure who didn't step into anyone's shoes, and no one has filled his shoes, or I would argue even could fill his shoes. His art form, his central art form was his voice, of course. And if you've read his memoir, True Hallucinations, which was originally published as a talking book, this memoir was originally grounded in, so it's an good example of how his written work was grounded in storytelling and stories that go back, back to the early days. And it continues to fascinate me that some of his early raps that hadn't been heard before continue to be uncovered. And I've been privileged to access what is one of certainly the earliest I know of raps that he gave to a private audience in San Francisco in November 1972 for about 3 hours. That was recorded by Tama Starr, and this recording, which is called Amazon Psychotropical Quest, has recently been released with a video sync by Peter Bergman. And you can see that on YouTube, and it's 3 hours of him regaling a small audience with the some of the core content that went into True Hallucination. So it's effectively sort of beta testing this content right back in 1972, which was about a year within 18 months of the so-called experiments at La Charrera. So all that stuff was very, very fresh. And but it is fascinating that there's still more raps out there that haven't been digitized and continue to be to do so, and to continue to provide us with insight on his character.
Right. Well, you and I first started chatting backstage a ways ago, enthused, back in May. Holy moly, Graham! You said that Terence's voice was melodic, and I'm like, melodic, melodic. And I was like, more like a rock snake being began to speak. Right, and you go, well, maybe an alien melody. And I go, yeah, right. Magnetic, yeah. Magnetic, and I said back to you, mesmerizing, literally as in Dr. Anton Mesmer, it was mesmerizing. And I go, metallic, magnetic, mesmerizing, that's just for the fun of it, going, there we go. So, yeah, because it was metallic, mesmerizing, magnetic, in that it's an extraordinary voice, and it again lives on, and it did require, I mean, that voice require a kind of surrender on the part of the listener to get down into being a rock lizard being, but willingly, because it was such a pirouette. I remember once he was saying, like, at one point he said, let me just do some writing without any cannabis, you know, without any cannabis. And he came back and he goes, that was the most boring, awful stuff. I'll never try that again. But anyway, so he really did love cannabis as a muse, as well as the mushrooms. Although, as just where I opened it up at that difficult passage in his life, and Cat's life too, you know, and that whole realm of, you know, are we moving to equal relationships? Well, he hands the baton to us too. But yeah, and then the DMT elves, right? I did all that. His love of the I Ching with mushrooms, right? The I Ching with mushrooms is a great idea. He dances briefly with Aleister Crowley, right? Which is, I think, something that many of us had to go through going, no, he's a power-abusing dingbat. So it was a brief dance with Aleister Crowley, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say that there was any dance at all with Crowley. I mean, I think he read a biography of Crowley. That's as I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well,
it was quite dismissive, and he was generally dismissive of the occult in general, which is somewhat weird because himself really embraced the occult in many respects, and so.
Right. So he and you are making. He and you are making a distinction between the occult and the esoteric. Are you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a long backstory there, but he was generally quite dismissive of you know, spiritualism and the Theosophical Society and so forth. And but yeah, here he was as a guy who embraced, you know, alchemy and so on and. He is, certainly a psychedelic occult figure who is widely embraced as such.
Yeah, well, I'm going to, and Francis Yates, and again, the Renaissance esotericism and all of that we need now. And your book is an excellent guide. You know, and you do a deft dance of non-hagiography, right? It's like what Alan Watts said about, you know, the befoibulence of Western humans and Christianity. They suck the finger instead of going where it pointed. And you do a really good job of like, no, we're not worshiping Terence, but we are going where he pointed. Check this out. Check that out. Be brave here. You know, be more embodied here. Be, you know, so is there a last well-wishing before I reluctantly let you go to keep this station on the air? Anything you want to spiral forth right now?
Yeah, well, I did mention that there are people ransacking their archives. One of those people happens to be his daughter, Clea McKenna, who is taking responsibility for the family archives that are currently being unearthed. And they have a website. I think it's terencemckenna.com. You can go to /donations there, where they're looking for donations to continue that process of archiving content that has been in storage for decades. And so it's really exciting. You know, new chapter to this whole story. So I encourage people to support that yes. Project.
That's wonderful. And it's an honor that Terence's family were so intimately deeply honest in their complexity, making themselves available to you and therefore to us, yeah?
Yeah, so I mean, I must say that my work is not a family authorized biography, but that being said, I've had the support and encouragement of family members. As I said, Pat Harrison has contributed a lot of content to this work, and there are so many people who were close to Terence, friends, lovers, acquaintances who we have the privilege of hearing their stories through this project, and I thank everyone who's been part of this process, and
That's
I thank
great.
You for having me on.
My pleasure, our pleasure. Well, thank you so much, Graham St. John. We reluctantly release you. Thank you very much. And now, oh great Kirsten, backstage, we're just going to play a smidge of the fantastic, rousing music as our segue that we tease everything into practice. So let's just have a smidge of our break music. Here we go.
Soldiers march through. The rich drink their whiskey, the poor pay the due. But a voice in the darkness, it rises, it grows. It's the sound of the people, the whole country knows. No king but the people.
Convening after this rousing music there, just to remind us that we want to tease everything, and everything we admire about Terence McKenna's life, his quirkitudes and his dedication and his profound erudition, you know, into practice now, and all the things, right? So we are in Fun Drive, and I think it's great to be offering as pledge enticements the book, Graham St. John's book, Strange Attractor, The Hallucinatory Life of Terence McKenna, for a pledge of $200. It's a very rich, rich book. Really, I do open it up and surf around for an hour and then open it up somewhere else going, ooh, it's very humming. It's like a conversation. It's like everything's conversing. So we're offering that. Worthy thing. And then just the last, and anything that you want to find on kpfa.org, many great things are available. But I'm particularly enthused about this book and then the last 2 weeks of guests, Mary's Mosaic by Peter Janney, you know, about Mary Meyer, whose birthday is on October 14th with me, JFK's only equal lover. And there's a nice segue between that last week and here because Mary Meyer talked to Tim Leary, got LSD, psilocybin, and cannabis from him, although she was wildly enthused about cannabis. Again, early, late 50s, early 60s, cannabis helped her navigate the grief over the tragic accidental death of her son. And she talks to Leary. She's already grabbed JFK by the lapels, going, "You've got stuff to do. Quit being a silly person." And they, JFK and Mary Meyer, definitely smoke cannabis in the White House and do a low mushroom psilocybin journey on a Sunday. The Wednesday following, JFK gives his remarkable speech, the American University speech, which is very trippy, very trippy. Would make even Terence smile. There we go. Maybe it did. I hope they talk in the afterworld. Because it was a psilocybin mushroom vision that JFK presented at American University. We've outgrown war. Let's compost war. Let's be dedicated to peace. Let's have compassion for the Russian people. They lost 20 million people. So profound that Khrushchev played it in Russia. And Khrushchev grieved when JFK was assassinated because of what was possible. So that's a fantastic book, Mary's Mosaic, for a pledge of $100. Really great. Goes very well with Separation of Church and Hate by John Fugelsang, which is the previous guest. It's a great. I like brewing them all together. For a pledge of $150, you get Separation of Church and Hate by John Fugelsang, also super strategically useful. His great strategy to us, John Fugelsang, is don't argue with right-wingers and evangelicals. Make them argue with the teachings of Jesus. It's like, right. Jesus, very trippy. So we have the psilocybin connection from Mary's Mosaic to Terence McKenna this week. We like that. Very different classes of people, but entheogenically enthused, dedicated to entheogens as part of a cultural sacrament that we need now to practice. So Separation of Church and Hate for a pledge of $150. Mary's Mosaic about JFK and Mary Meyer for a pledge of $100. The wonderful Strange Attractor, The Hallucinatory Life of Terence McKenna for a pledge of $200. All, one or all or none of those, you know, can be yours by calling 800-439-5732. That's 800-439-5732. We invite a little bit of Terence's mesmerizing voice, trance-inducing, or kpfa.org, or again, if you're a part of our Los Angeles, Southern California listening team, 818-985-5735 in Los Angeles, kpfk.org. So thanks, many people getting up here. I like also that Anonymous is always so generous in Berkeley, pledge for the original folk and fairy tales of the Brothers Grimm. That goes really well with everything. Thank you very much, Anonymous. Thank you, Jen in San Bruno. For all of you Berkeley denizens, there's a great deal of Berkeley history in The Strange Attractor, The Strange Life of Terence, The Hallucinatory Life of Terence McKenna, much humming and resonance. And I think the baton really is handed to us, you know, onward to symbiotic mutualism. You know, I'm fond of Terence's death chart, which is leaving with a liberating blessing going forth. I like feeling to him, you know, well done, person delivering a Sermon on a Mount is his scorpionic self. And part of what we're all working on to be Scorpio, which is to be deeply, warily, suspiciously diving informed, and to learn, all of us, how to love it all anyway. That's like the best medicine. So yeah, absolutely. So definitely, team, you know, humming alive with everyone. We know we're in a time of collapse, maybe even what's ongoing, maybe even imminent collapse. I'm very fond of this young woman, Sai, who's a complexity scientist, or gathering it all together about the collapse of systems. I'm wildly enthused. We'll post a link to her work in Patreon Visionary Activist Show, because it's like, well, here we are, okay, collapsing systems, you know, and what shall we ladle out? All of us citizens, you know, and how do we bring into play now, you know, all to which Terence was dedicated, all to which Mary Meyer was dedicated, all to which John Fugelsang and Jesus were dedicated, right? It's a rousing team. We need all the help we can get, and to experiment, to invite in. I presume no certainty about the mysteries of death. We do not impose limiting certainty on liberating mystery, part of our affirmative guiding mechanism. But I do like to think of the dead as a community rooting for us, available in some way, cheering us on, you know, and that's also part of what we're pledging to. So, team, it is our last day of Fun Drive. It would be great to be on the board. We had a rousing, fantastic week last week, and let's do it again just for fun. Again, you can have these books about which I am wildly enthused, Mary's Mosaic, and I have them right here. I'm just reaching. We're all in this thing together. Mary's Mosaic, the CIA conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and their vision for world peace. That's good. Terrence had a vision of world peace. It's his exit death chart. I love the death charts message to us. And I love that in Washington, D.C., there was outside the Academy of Sciences, there was a statue of Einstein gazing at his birth chart. And the scientists were like, no, that's a superstitious nonsense. That's terrible. So the sculptor said, would it be okay if he's gazing at his death chart? And the scientists were like, yeah, that's fine. Anyway, so the death charts are often really powerful for everybody. And I love, Terrence's exit. It's really like a message to us. On April 3rd, 2000, dark of the moon in Aries, when people gather to determine the course of culture, as we are dedicated to doing here, you know, ongoing, and also to be really, to embody, to invite in, you know, a collaboration. The quality of entheogens that this show for 30 years has honored also is, you know, may it be, some of us really experience this, that the portals open, you know, between worlds, between the backstage world of, you know, participatory animism, really. And that's why, you know, we are open. DMT certainly does that in a strange backstage kind of way, when we are available to cooperate with nature's guiding genius. We are humbled as humans. The word human comes from humus, which is dirt, from which we get humble. We're meant to be humble people in the dirt. We really are. Oh, thank you, Marianne. In Oakland, blessed be, who just pledged for Mary's Mosaic, the CIA conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and their vision for world peace by Peter Janney and Dick Russell. That's great. Thank you so much, team. Again, we are humming. You can join us by calling 800-439-5732, our online kpfa.org, or in Southern California, KPFK, 818-985-5735, or kpfk.org. Many wonderful things available, but really, you know, to keep this voice, this station, this network, you know, woefully alive. The chart of Pacifica is coming alive. Its sun was always at 25 plus Aries. Chiron and Eris are there now, which is advocacy on behalf of, and the images for Pacifica is a woman bursting with gifts more than she can hold. And it's like, this is a great network, both literally and mythologically. And the great station, our mothership, KPFA, the founder, and KPFK, you know, the younger sister, both in cahoots. We want to keep these voices online as we gaze at collapse. And we want to tease all esoteric learning and all entheogenic experience into practice. You know, the tyranny before us is a monster animation of all that has been unaddressed and corrupt in America history. And we might even say that about, you know, tyranny everywhere. It's to address these things. And if we tap into the deep delving, you know, scorpionic intelligence of Terrence McKenna, you know, and the deep delving of Mary Meyer and the deep delving of John Fugelsang, all three, you know, many, are gifted, as Terrence's life really is an embodiment, to take liberating esoterica and express it in popular, well, not popular, in accessible cultural vernacular. He really did that. You know, and I think that's what we're up to aspiring here. So as you pledge, oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you, Steve, very much. It's really great. Enjoy your show with plenty of sad news going on, like hearing Creative Solutions. Yes, all praise Mitch Jezerich, right? He's leaving, but he always will be with us. That is true. We honor. So thank you, team. And again, 800-439-5732. We will. I can't do Terrence's voice, but I can hear it. I can hear it. And you can hear Terrence's voice in this book that we're pitching, Strange Attractor, The Hallucinatory Life of Terrence McKenna by great cultural anthropologist and author Graham St. John. So you can hear it. You can hear it. And we want the voices of all who've been deep delving, erudition. You know, erudition, that's something, again, just to honor in Terence's life in this book, reminding us there's so much. You know, Carl Jung, Terence McKenna, Joseph Campbell, they're pointing to us going, check this out and check this out, you know, and question reality, you know, and be creatively suspicious and encourage others to be that as well. So thank you again, Stephen Novato and all the team. So let's do a little more. This is our last moments here. This is the last day of Fun Drive this season, right? But it has been a joy, you know, and I do have enthusiasm for today and for the last 2 weeks too, in which we are offering Mary's Mosaic, the CIA conspiracy to murder John F. Kennedy, Mary Pinchot Meyer, and their vision for world peace. We hosted Peter Janney. I will be hosting Peter Janney on Trickster Training Council. You can find out more about that on Monday, October 13th, coyotenetworknews.com. But right, it's Mary Meyer's birthday. It's my birthday. It's Charlie Kirk's birthday. Just put that in your pipe and smoke it. We'd like that. Oh, thank you. Whoops. Thank you. Sorry for the microphone rustling. Thank you very much, Anonymous in Berkeley. Anonymous is just the best. Anonymous really always comes through. That's so wonderful. Who pledged for Mary's Mosaic? All right, we're in our final minute and a half. We're doing, you know, medium okay. But any amount is completely welcome. We're humming, we're magnetizing. Pledge on behalf of those who cannot. Many people tell me that your dogs and cats like listening. They can't dial. You know, dial on behalf of participatory animism. You know, all it takes is just to Saturn the Neptune, to dedicate the resources and the money that they irrigate, you know, so that the parched fields bloom of community, that we keep it going now, that you engage all of our skills, all of our intelligence, you know, to compost the villainy and unaddressed corruption in American history and in all tyrannical history, right, into the cauldron. It's practical alchemy time right now. The Negredo bubbling. That's a whole other show. 800-439-5732. That's 800-439-5732 in the Berkeley Bay Area. KPFA.org. Or if you're a listener in Los Angeles, 818-985-5735 or kpfk.org online. Thank you, team. Oh, thank you, Anonymous, again. That's great. And somebody, yeah, humble gifts are super welcome too. Just to make a little interior dedication as you pledge, you know, for small amount or large amount, completely wonderful. That's great. And here's Anonymous in Scotts Valley. I had the gift of being able to do many radio interviews with Terrence in the 90s. That's cool. And then it was Roy of Hollywood, ancestor now, you know, who made Terrence a Los Angeles happening on his show. Something's happening in Los Angeles. Super wonderful. All right. Thank you, team. Still, you can still donate. Absolutely. This is 800-439-5732. Or 818-985-5735 in Los Angeles. Thanks always, Kirsten Thomas. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you.